Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Can someone douse this incense for me, please? Thank you. We're reading this morning from Canto 4, Chapter 29, Talks Between Narada Muni and King Prachinabarhi, text number 46. Yada yasya anugrinati bhagavan atmabhavitaha saha jahati matim loke vere cha parinishtitam yada yasyana grinnati bhagavan atmabhavitaha sajahati matim loke vere cha parinishtitam yada yasyana grinnati bhagavan atmabhavitaha sajahati matim loke vere cha parinishtitam yada yasyana grinnati bhagavan atmabhavitaha sajahati matim loke vere cha parinishtitam. Sajahati matim loke vere cha padinishtitam yadayasyana grinati yadayasyana grinati Chapadinishtitam Rajasana Grinati Bhavitaha Yadayasyana grinnati bhagavan atmabhavitaha sajahati matim loke yada when yasya whom anugrinnati favors by causeless mercy bhagavan the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Atmabhavitaha. Realized by a devotee. Saha. Such a devotee. Jahati. Gives up. Matim. Consciousness. Loke. In the material world. Vere. In the Vedic functions. Cha. Also, parinishtitam, fixed. Translation, when a person is fully engaged in devotional service, he is favored by the Lord, who bestows his causeless mercy. At such a time, The awakened devotee gives up all material activities and ritualistic performances mentioned in the Vedas. Please repeat. When a person is fully engaged in devotional service, he is favored by the Lord, who bestows his causeless mercy. At such a time, the awakened devotee gives up all material activities and ritualistic performances mentioned in the Vedas. Srila Prabhupada's purport. In the previous verse, those who are in knowledge have been described as unable to approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the previous verse, those who are in knowledge have been described as unable to appreciate the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Similarly, this verse indicates that those who are followers of the Vedic rituals, as well as those who are followers of fruitive activities, are unable to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In these two verses, both the karmis and the jnanis are described as unfit to understand him. As described by Srila Rupa Goswami, only when one is completely free from mental speculation and fruitive activity, anabhilashita shunyam jnana karma janavartam, can one engage in pure devotional service without being polluted by material desires. The significant word atma bhavitaha indicates that the Lord is awakened in one's mind if one constantly thinks of him. A pure devotee is always thinking of the lotus feet of the Lord. Savaimanak Krishna Padara Vindayo. A pure devotee cannot remain a moment without being absorbed in thoughts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This constant thinking of the Lord is described in the Bhagavad Gita as Satata Yuktanam, always engaging in the Lord's service. Bhajatam Priti Purvakam. This is devotional service in love and affection. Because the Supreme Personality of Godhead dictates to the pure devotee from within, the devotee is saved from all material activities. Even the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies are considered material activities, because by such activities one is simply elevated to other planetary systems, the residential abodes of the demigods. Lord Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita 9:25, Yanti Deva Vrata Devan, Pitrin Yanti Bhatri Vrataha, Bhutani Yanti Bhuteja, Yanti Madhyajino Pimam. Those who worship the demigods will take birth among the demigods. Those who worship ghosts and spirits will take birth among such beings. Those who worship the ancestors will go to the ancestors, and those who worship me will live with me. The word atma bhavitaha also indicates that the devotee is always engaged in preaching to deliver conditioned souls. It is said of the six Goswamis, Nana Shastra Vachara Nayaka Nipano Sad Dharma Sangstapako Loka Namita Karino. A pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always thinking of how fallen conditioned souls can be delivered. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, influenced by the merciful devotee's attempt to deliver fallen souls, enlightens the people in general from within by his causeless mercy. If a devotee is blessed by another devotee, he becomes free from karma kanda and jnana kanda activities. As confirmed in the Brahma Samhita, Vedeshu Durlabham, the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be realized through karma kanda and jnana kanda. Adurlabham atma bhakto, the Lord is realized only by a sincere devotee. This material world, the cosmic manifestation, is created by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the living entities have come here to enjoy themselves. The Vedic instructions guide them according to different regulative principles, and intelligent people take advantage of these instructions. Thus, they enjoy material life without being disturbed. This is actually illusion. And to get out of this illusion by one's endeavor is very difficult. The general populace is engaged in material activities, and when people are a little advanced, they become attracted by the ritualistic ceremonies mentioned in the Vedas. However, when one is frustrated in the performance of these ritualistic ceremonies, he again comes to material activities. In this way, both the followers of the Vedic rituals and the followers of material activities are entangled in conditional life. These people get the seed of devotional service only by the goodwill of the Guru and Krishna. This is confirmed in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Guru Krishna Pasare Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. When one is engaged in devotional service, he is no longer attracted to material activities. When a man is covered by different designations, he cannot engage in devotional service. One has to become freed from such designative activities, sarvopadi vinimuktam, and become pure in order to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead through purified senses. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhaktir Uchyate. The servitor of the Lord through purified senses is called, the service of the Lord through purified senses is called bhakti yoga or devotional service. The sincere devotee is always helped by the super soul who resides within the heart of every living entity, as Lord Krishna confirms in Bhagavad Gita 10:10. Tesham satada yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam tadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upiyanti te. To those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. This is the stage of becoming free from the contamination of the material world. At such a time, a devotee makes friends with another devotee and his engagement in material activities ceases completely. At that time, he attains the favor of the Lord and loses his faith in material civilization, which begins with Varnashram Dharma. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu speaks clearly of one's becoming liberated from the Varnashram Dharma, the most exalted system of human civilization. At such a time, one feels himself to be perpetually the servant of Lord Krishna, a position taken by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. Naham vipro nacha nadapatir napi vaisho nashudro naham varni nasugrihapatir no vanasto yatirva kintu prodhyan nikata padamanam napurna mitabde gopi batu padakamalayor dasa dana dasa dasanu dasaha. This is also Padyavali 63. I am not a Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra. I am not a brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, or sannyasi. What am I? I am the eternal servant of the servant of the servant of Lord Krishna. Through the disciplic succession, one can attain this conclusion, which is perfect elevation to the transcendental platform. Om Gyanatimarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Miditam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and to all members of Sri Parampara. So this verse is spoken near the conclusion of Narada Muni's instructions to King Prachanabarhi. The whole analogy of King Puranjan and Puranjani, his wife, spoken in previous chapters. The explanation is almost complete. Narada Muni will explain a few more details about the transmigration of the soul, which is very fascinating. Will be coming up in the next few classes. But here, he makes a very a conclusive statement about the futility of trying to mitigate the material miseries, which are described in great detail in this long story about King Puranjan, by karma kanda or jnana kanda, by some kind of fruit of activities, even guided by the Vedas, to take us to a higher birth or the heavenly planets. Or even the jnana kanda, in which one speculates and separates matter from spirit, only by devotional service to the Lord, can one be favored by the Lord. This phrase, yasya anugrinati, we can only be favored by Krishna by engaging in devotional service to Krishna. And only in that way can we be actually liberated. Daivi esha gunamahi mama maya dadatyaya. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita 7:14, that this energy of mine, excuse me, material energy of mine composed of the three modes of nature, is impossible to cross over on one's own. It is, after all, divine. It is my energy, and it is imbued with this great power. But one who surrenders unto me, mame viepa padyante, maya me tang tarantide, can cross beyond it. So even the very refined instructions in the Vedas for elaborate sacrifices, or the part of the Vedas that deal with speculative knowledge and jnana, do not constitute surrender to Krishna. And right at the beginning of the Gita, Krishna deals with this. You remember Arjuna, he was arguing with the Lord that he didn't want to fight this battle. But he just didn't say, no, I don't want to fight. He backed up his argument with some quotes from the Vedas. He says, it's said in the Vedas that it's very important to keep the family together. It said that if the women become unprotected, then there'll be Varna Shankara, and this world will become a hell. And I'll be responsible. I'll be responsible because I'm killing all the husbands. And so I will be incurring great sin. And therefore, it's not a good idea, this battle in general. So when Krishna, right in the second chapter, Krishna begins to describe his instructions. He begins to render his instructions to Arjuna. He says that these are these flowery words of the Vedas that you're quoting. You're speaking very learned words from the Vedas, but actually you're a fool, you know, because you're lamenting for that which is not lamentable, the dead body. Right away, he raises the whole platform of the discussion to discussion of transcendence, namely the soul, and there's this 20-verse lesson on the nature of the soul. And then later in the chapter, he says, these Vedavada Ratas, those who are supposed knowers of the Vedas, such as King Pratinabharishat, they are very enamored by the flowery words, Yamimam Pushpitam Vacham Prabhadam Javipashtita. They say this is all there is. This is the real purpose of the Vedas. Vedavada Ratapata Nanyarastiti Varana. They say there's nothing else. Then what's the purpose? Kamatmana Svargapara Janma Karma Padapradam Kriya Vishesha Baholam Bhogaishraya Katimpati. This is exactly describing what Prachanapari was doing when Narada Muni appeared out of his mercy to instruct him. Engaging in these elaborate sacrifices for good birth, progeny, for wealth, and ultimately going to the heavenly planets and all these things. This was the mistake. He had sent his sons off to practice severe austerities, and they were fortunate, the Prachetas, to meet Lord Shiva. We heard that about that, the song of Shiva, before. But King Prachinabhari himself was just immersed in all of these elaborate sacrifices. So this whole analogy, or allegory, let's say, of Puranjan was spoken to break Prachinabhari's attachment to these elaborate rituals in which he was still remaining entangled in birth and death. And so you get this very, very graphic description of Puranjan. And now he was simply enjoying his whole life, you know, through his material intelligence and sex life and all of these different things. Became very cruel and hard-hearted, went out to the forest to hunt. You remember that? He was just killing animals indiscriminately. This is the nature of absorption in lusty activities and lusty desires. Krishna says right in the third chapter that avritam gyaninetina gyanino nityavairam, the knowledge of the soul, who is known as the knower, the knower of the field, is covered by lust. And one forgets everything. One can forget everything. Who he is, who God is, what your mission in life is. You can lose complete empathy with you know, poor animals and kill them mercilessly, or human beings. You can become a murderer, mass murderer, war criminal. All with the root of it is these lusty desires, this kama. So the activities, if followed by in the Vedas, still keep you within that boundary of lusty activities and don't solve the problem. And that was spoken of in the previous verse. Worship of the demigods for material advancement. Krishna also speaks very explicitly in Bhagavad Gita 7:20. Kamaistaista rita jnana papadyante yanyadevata. The same idea. By various material desires, one's knowledge is stolen away. Rita jnana. And one surrenders to other gods beside me for material purposes. And whatever you want to worship, it may be an actual demigod, or you may worship a totem pole, or you may worship some politician. Major worship in the last 4 days of the politicians. Huge amount of money, adulation, mantras chanted, right? Fire sacrifice may have been there. They're pouring so much money into the fire, right? To worship one individual, and there'll be some individual. This is worship. For the same exact reason that people worship the gods to go to heaven. They'll give me something that I don't have. I'll give this worship and I'll get something back. Motivated. motivated worship. So Krishna says, you want to worship that way? I'll make your faith strong. Is he? Whatever you want to worship, even this material energy, total atheists, you have to worship something. So they worship the material world, the science and technology. This is matter worship. And you get something, right? You can manipulate the world, you get the computers, you get the money, you get the all of the bowels of this civilization. But you don't get happiness, you don't get peace. It becomes more fearful, especially when Chanda Vega starts coming at you with the 360, the army of 360 days and nights, right? What good does all of this worship of the material energy help you when death is threatening? And old age, that beautiful son of Kala, a daughter of Kala, Kala Kanya. Remember Kala Kanya? Her nickname is Dra, old age. So all of this worship, whether it's of the gods or even this cultivation of knowledge, simply just trying to separate matter from spirit, will not help us to get the blessings of the Lord. But a little devotion, you see. So what is Krishna completes his lesson there in the seventh chapter. With that faith, you then make that worship, and from that worship you may get something. But what's the nature of these boons? Antavatupalam. They're temporary. Your situation is a permanent problem as long as you're in this material world. But the boons you're getting are temporary. So therefore, alpamedisham. Foolish. Those who worship the gods for material benefits are fools. Alpamedisham. And then he echoes the verse in the ninth chapter. Devan devajo yanti madbhakta yanti mamapi. Those who worship the gods go to the gods. But they're also souls. Their realm is also temporary. And so ultimately, you come back down here and you're back again in the world of illusion, the world of birth and death. And so, but those who worship me come to me. So this is what's being expressed here. And he's coming to the conclusion. And the conclusion is always exactly what Prabhupada quotes here. Anya bilasha dashun yum jnana karma janavatam. The only truly auspicious activity in the world is service to Krishna. But that service needs to be completely unmotivated. This is without any other desire, whether categorized as karma or jnana, which is just exactly what he's talking about. Karma kanda or jnana kanda. That's a covering, you see. It needs to be devoid of that. Then what is the motive? If you're going to act, there has to be some motive. Anukulena Krishna anushinana bhakti. The motive has to be consciously there to please Krishna and to please Krishna's representative. That is what will evoke the actual mercy of Krishna by which one can get liberation, which is just the first installment of bhakti. Because in order to cover these desires, it's very long-seated. You know, we have such a millions of years of lifetime of conditioning. Conditioning to what? To different kinds of enjoyment in this world. This is why when we get this body, it's explained very nicely in these later. This chapter, the subsequent verses, explained to my mind in one of the most clear ways and very enlightening ways the process of transmigration. In great detail, how the mind, the subtle mind, is the repository of all these desires, and that you get another body just suitable to fulfill those desires. If you're in the mode of ignorance, you may not need a human body. You'll get thrown down into an animal body. You still have your eyes, still have your tongue, still have your ears, you know, in the dog body, right? But you'll have a certain other set of sense objects other than human by which you can try to enjoy. And so in order to uproot once and for all these deep-seated desires, one has to practice devotional service, which will give one the higher taste. Give one the higher taste that will completely obliterate the desire for these lower things. This Puranjan is the example. He is the archetype of the conditioned soul. Puranjana means the person living in the city of nine gates. That's us, you know. And more or less, we're all Puranjans. Now we're trying to be pure devotees, but every living entity here is a Puranjan. Living in the city, especially human beings, we all these nine gates. When you get down to the amoeba level, maybe there aren't nine gates anymore. But the basic idea is still there. We have this elaborate city here by which we can enjoy, which we try to enjoy. But as, but with a little intelligence, we can see it's a bankrupt prospect. It's a loser's game, trying to enjoy in the city of nine gates, because it's so frustrating. It has to come to an end. It's all in the Bhagavad Gita. Adyantavanta konteya nateshu ramate buddha. Those who are intelligent don't take pleasure in the senses and the sense objects because it's a source of pain, and it's temporary. So it leaves you, what does it leave you with after you have some enjoyment? It leaves you with a desire to do it again, right? So there's that anxiety, right? Then, so suppose you enjoy again. You smoke a cigarette or you smoke a joint, okay? So then, you come down and you got to get it again, and you have to get the money. Then you have to do it. And eventually, the body is breaking down slowly. It becomes harder and harder to have that enjoyment. But the desire is still there. In the subtle body, you've conditioned yourself now to a certain kind of enjoyment. And that kind of enjoyment can never be, because it's always temporary. It's depending on the senses. Senses are just fragile constructs of material energy. And inevitably, by the force of time, you become unable to enjoy. And gradually, this very body, which has it in its young state, is full of so much vim and vigor, and we can enjoy this, enjoy that, becomes a source of pain. And it's your body. You know, you get like I'm. You know, as you get older, it's very instructive. That's very body, which you know you forget about. And it's doing that. Suddenly, there's a pain here, there's a pain there. You know, I can't see much. You know, it's my body. You know, I got to live with it. You know, so that very same body becomes a source of suffering for you, and you become in great anxiety because you don't know anything else. The total materialist doesn't know anything else. So it has to be. You know, as devotees, we have great hope. Doesn't matter if we're 80 or 8. We have great hope for the future because we're leading toward Krishna, the eternal abode of happiness. No death, no old age. But just imagine, if you can, take your mentality into a total materialism where the only hope you have is what you see here. You see how hopeless it is? You know, this is why these so-called demigod politicians, they try to bring hope. Yeah, I know it's bad now. You really had it bad by the other guy, but now you just elect me and there's great hope. Right? Eternal happiness. And you know, you'll have to, but your children, it's the children, you know, will live in Shangri-La. I'll give them everything will be fine. Isn't it? That's what they sell, hope. You know, vote for me and everything will be better. The Prabhupada points this out in the Bhagavatam, they're all over the place. So this is a misguided civilization, this Bhagavad philosophy, which this movement is saturated with. That's the meaning of it. Lord Chaitanya came to preach Bhagavad philosophy and includes this Paranjan chapter. It's not just the rasa dance. This is an essential part of it. And that's why so much of Prabhupada's preaching was revolutionary in the most obvious sense of the word. Uprooting the legitimacy of this misdirected civilization. Tad Bhagavasago Janataga Viplavo. This Bhagavatam is made to bring a revolution in this misguided civilization. Krishna was very concerned that the kings, that's political, that the kings would be devotees. That's the whole meaning of this Mahabharata war, of the Kurukshetra war. Because he understands society as a whole needs to be imbued with real dharma, with the chanting of the holy name. And that can happen when the leaders are devotees. Then great revolutions happen. So, but obviously the revolution has to come from below at this point, you know. I mean, that, so it's mass chanting of the holy name, mass distribution of books, festivals, prasadam distribution. This is a movement for bringing out a revolution. But that revolution has to also take place in our own hearts. It won't happen externally until it happens internally. So this instruction, this purport with all these wonderful conclusive instructions of Srila Prabhupada, are giving us the conclusion of really what is the way to avoid the fate of Paranjan, which was one of great fear and unhappiness. And of course, we read how he took birth as a woman, Mulya, and was married to Mulya Dwaja. So there was some auspiciousness there. But Paranjan himself was a sad case, and we don't want to be in that situation. So I'm just going to run through really quickly this purport, and then we'll have a little discussion. So Prabhupada talks first about the need for fixing the mind on Krishna. Savaimana Krishna Badara Vindayo. This is the essential instruction of Bhagavad Gita, the most confidential of all. Manmana Bhava Madbhakto. This makes everything auspicious, being Krishna conscious. And the foolishness of demigod worship, Yanti Deva Vrita Devan, we should all know this verse, this argument that Krishna gives in the ninth chapter. He spoke about the Goswamis, how they it's not just our own salvation that we're looking for. These Goswamis, they were at the highest levels of prema bhakti in the mood of the gopis. But their mission was nana shastra vachara naikindipano. Just as Lord Chaitanya showed, he had an external reason and internal reason for appearing. So they also had their cultivation of bhakti and their writing of these literatures by which they were preaching. This was their preaching. Writing, excavating the pastimes, building the temples. This is all part of extending the mercy of the Lord by making him accessible and giving the sad-dharma sangstapako, the understanding of what the true eternal dharma is, Bhagavad Dharma, for all time. So that's how to get the mercy of the Lord. How to get the mercy of Lord Nityananda is by preaching the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the message of Krishna. And that was what this verse was about. By that anugrinati, that's mercy, one can be relieved of all these miseries. And then Prabhupada talked about Tesham Satata Yuktanam. He quoted this verse several times, that by serving Krishna constantly with love, Krishna guides us from within. This is the unknown friend, right? Avijata. Who do we know? You know, we don't know the super soul, we've forgotten. But he's always with us, the best friend, giving us intelligence by how we can come to him, how we can associate with devotees, and how we can progress in devotional service. So without taking shelter of that friend and taking instructions, we have no real guidance in this world. So that friend appears externally as a spiritual master and teaches us through the Bhagavad Gita and through other books. And also gradually as we become purified, we can hear within. And then finally Prabhupada quotes this verse, Nana, Naham Vipro Nachanatapatir. So this is in terms of Varnashram. Prabhupada says directly that just performing one's duties with a materialistic motive, even in Varnashram, is illusion. You see? And so Lord Chaitanya had this verse, I'm not any of these things. I don't really identify with anything in Varnashram. I'm simply the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna, the master of the gopis. So we have a few minutes for a discussion, if there are any. Judah Karma Prabhu. What about the mic? That should be activated before Hare Krishna. All right, go ahead. I'll repeat your question. There you go.
So, comment and a question. Comment, Dravida for president. Of the world.
I accept. I accept the nomination. That's right.
Okay, so, and then when you were reading the purport, there was a sentence, I made a note here, it said something to the effect that, you know, if you're infected with jnana and karma, then you can't get to the point of performing devotional service without it generating more material desires. Is there a sentence like that there?
Let's see. Archita, can you help me? Okay.
Like I said, you know, without being free from karma and jnana, you can't.
Oh, let's see. Vedesha Dulabha, maybe?
Do you have it? Okay, read it out.
Go ahead.
Just read it. You read it.
Similarly,
No, that's not.
That's not it?
No, it says it was something to the effect that if you have karma and jnana, you can't even perform devotional service without it generating more material desires.
All right, what's the start of the paragraph? I'm sorry, it's a long purport.
Okay, yeah, that's the sentence.
Okay.
So it seems like it's an unbreakable cycle, because if you're performing devotional service and you have some material desire or tendency to karma and jnana, it's going to generate material desires, which will generate more, you know, karma and jnana, which will generate more material desires, even if you're performing devotional service. So how do you,
in other words, which
break out of
first?
That cycle? Seems like you're caught.
All right, let's see. Let me look at like it. As described by Rupa Goswami, he's quoting Anyabhilasha, only when one is completely free from a speculation, fruitive activity, Anyabhilashita, can one engage in pure devotional service without being polluted by material desires. my understanding there is that, in other words, it's not that by engaging in devotional service, one becomes polluted by material desires by that service. What he's saying is that one who does that, one who strives for that, because obviously we are not free of material desires when we begin devotional service. So, but if one is following in the line here and understands what, oh, I should not engage in devotional service for the motive or for the reason of gaining some knowledge or gaining some material thing. And in this way, one can get the blessing of the Lord and his representatives and stay on that pure platform. In other words, it's not that engaging in devotional service to Krishna with the understanding that I should be free of material desires is going to produce more material desires. You know, even if you have those material desires, the question is the motive. If you're engaging in devotional service, karma mishra bhakti, say, people come in, I offer a little something to the deity. I don't want to hear the Bhagavatam class. I'm not interested in that. I need some ashravad. I'm praying for blessing. Then that's not anyabhilasha sunyam. But if I have material desires, but I'm engaging in devotional service with the understanding that I just want to please Krishna, or I should just want to please Krishna, then that leads to the freedom from material desires. That's my understanding here. It's not a closed circle. Archita?
This is why the regulative principles are important, not just chanting. If one is following the regulative principles, in other words, not committing more sins, egregious, gross sins, then the heart becomes a fit place for the mantra to take over and purify. If you're chanting but you're not following principles, then you're just wetting the wood and you're not getting very far. Whereas the impersonalists, many of them, the real impersonalists, they don't commit sinful activities so per se. They don't meet, they don't engage in illicit sex, but they're not chanting. Therefore, the heart doesn't become purified. We're doing both. Even though we may have sinful desires, if we remain on the platform of no sinful activities, the heart becomes a fit place for the mantra to gradually soften and purify. And then you give up. Then you get to the Anyabhilashita, you know, platform. You can't get there without purification. And you can't be purified if you're committing sins. So we have to stop committing sins and allow the mantra to gradually bring us to that point of Anyabhilashita Sunya.
But I would agree that with the caveat that even the impersonalists, they may not be performing any gross sins. But if they're chanting Hare Krishna with the idea that they're going to merge into the body of the Lord, then they're not going to get pure bhakti. They're not going to get the mercy of Krishna. But the simple devotee, he may, you know, still be troubled by some material desires. But he's chanting and trying to give up those offenses, which is, you know, if you go through the offenses, they cover all of this. Then you can feel the attraction, and you can feel the nectar of the holy name, and you can be gradually freed from these material desires. That's the fact. Yes, Nikatma Babu.
one of the paragraphs here where he says, this is confirmed in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. He explains that the whole thing starts by having the mercy of the spiritual master.
Right.
Unless one has a connection with a bona fide spiritual master, where can you go? How far do you go?
Right.
The cycle doesn't break.
And the point here is that you may be following the Vedas. You may even be chanting and appear to be a devotee. But without getting that Bhakti Lata Bija, which is defined in chapter 19 of the Manjalila as the holy name and the instructions given by the spiritual master, one has to follow them and repeat them. Prabhupada talks about that as part of the watering process. Then everything takes place. So one of the themes here, because the Bhagavatam begins, you remember when the whole episode of Vyasadeva being dissatisfied, he was dissatisfied precisely because he had only written all of these Vedas and everything describing these rituals that Prachanabhari was doing. And so Narada Muni said, no, you have to give pure bhakti because the people are just going to be attracted to the enjoyment and forget all about the restrictions. So that, there will always be pseudo bhaktas. There will be those who appear to be following, but who really haven't gotten that bhakti lata bij and are not watering it. But they may be chanting Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna mantra, kirtan, has become very popular. You know, I don't know if you saw that recent book. If anyone was offended by my participation in it, I didn't know who else was going to be in there. But anyway, the point is there are people chanting Hare Krishna today. They're chanting the holy name, you know, for money. To make money, basically. You know, to quote one, I'm not going to, forgive me, you know. I chant Hare Krishna, but I don't think of any blue boy. What the heck is that? It's completely bogus. So one of the important things, Prabhupada, you know, always brings it back home. Hey, anya bilashita shunyam. You know, following in the line of true devotees and chanting in that way, anukirtanam, not just kirtanam, anukirtanam. And so you're absolutely right. That's getting by the grace of Krishna and the spiritual master, one gets the seed of devotion and one has, of the creeper of devotion, one has to water it nicely, you know, by proper chanting in the proper mood. So it's a razor's edge, you know. Not everyone who chants Hare Krishna is a Gaudiya Vaishnav going back to Krishna Loka. At least not right away. That's important to understand that. I don't know who was first.
What's Anukirtanam?
Go ahead. What is it?
What's Anukirtanam?
Anukirtanam means chanting, but following in the footsteps of those who chanted before. What's that verse? I forget the verse immediately. But that's as soon as you see the word Anu, it means following. One verse comes to mind. I was saying, Vikriditam Vadavadhubriditam Devishno Shodhanvato Anushunayad Anavarda Yejak. It's the last verse of the Rasa chapters, Rasa dance. And it says, one who hears these pastimes with great faith from the proper source. This is the way the acharyas say, with great faith and anushunayad, hearing from the proper source. Because, you know, the people who in India, you find they'll just go, we'll have a Bhagavat Saptaha, you know, 8-7 days. It's just Rasa dance. You know, they're just chanting the Rasa dance for some popular adulation. It's not Anushunayad. It's not Shuddhanvato. So that when you see that Anu, it's very important. Yeah.
So isn't it a fine line, even the motive of pleasing Krishna? Can't that be, can't that even get adulterated? Like, it's to my understanding that you're saying the motive should not be to get some material thing, but isn't... I'm chanting Hare Krishna, I'm doing service so I can please Krishna. Can't that lead to, adulteration?
It's a little hard if you keep that motive in mind.
So then it's safe to say that if that's one motive to hold on to please Krishna is okay.
Definitely. But... Okay. What pleases Krishna? We, you know, dasa, dasa, no dasa. Just like, you know, the morning program. You know, we're just thinking of the morning program. Getting up early, coming to Mangalarti, you know. That's a sacrifice, many devotees. You know, there's never, you know, at least in my experience in America, you know, hundreds and hundreds of devotees who spontaneously get up to come to Mangalartik. It's always a little difficult to get there. So why do we do it? You know, well, we do it, you know, for various reasons. Ideally, we do it because we want to see, you know, we want to see Krishna. We want Krishna to see us. We know that we should do it, and we know it pleases him, and we also want to do it. But that may not be there. It may come and go, you know, in the early stages. I'm not spontaneously attracted to go, you know. But we do it because Prabhupada set it up. We're doing it to please the representative of Krishna. We know it's the right thing to do. It's good to do. It's good for us, good for everybody else, and we should do it, and therefore I do it. But there's no real desire to do it. So that constant motive, what should I do now at this moment to please my spiritual master, and in doing so to please Krishna? That's really the foundation of our sadhana bhakti. That's what it means when the spiritual man, by the mercy of the spiritual master, you get the seed of devotion. Then you have an eternal debt of gratitude to that spiritual master. Otherwise, you have no connection to Krishna. He gave you the instructions, he gave you the mantras, he gave you the shastra and everything else. So that motive, when you know, Krishna is a little elusive, you know, it's very refined to always think of Krishna, which Prabhupada talks about here, and always be having the motive of pleasing Krishna. But it's easier and more practical because of the extensive practical instructions we've been given from the spiritual master of what we should do to please the spiritual master. Ultimately, the spiritual master wants us to always think of Krishna, so it's one. But that's practical. Yes, Prabhu.
So what do we mean when Prabhupada said in a purport one time that there are some people that are in the guise of a devotee, but they're actually demons?
We can think of Ravana. Didn't Ravana disguise himself as a sannyasi, you know, to, you know, do nefarious things? The thing is that, you know, this is, if you go back to chapter 16 of the Bhagavad Gita, yes, what is that first quality of the demons, you know? And if you think about it, it's dumba. Dumbo darba vimanascha. Now, dumba, probably translated as pride, but it also has the meaning, inevitable meaning, of being deceitful, you know. So that thing where the demons saying, I'll perform some sacrifice in name only, you know. Well, everyone's, you know, it's really profitable to be a devotee. I can get so many things, you know, adulation, whatever. So I'll become a devotee. Or even more sadly, what happens is because, you know, devotional service is a battle. You know, the battle is in your heart to so many degrees. You know, the demonic qualities fighting the divine qualities, isn't it? I mean, if you're live in this material world, you grow up in this modern civilization, it's hard not to acquire demonic qualities, bodily concept of life, and, you know, all of these different things. So when you come to devotional service, then there's this other influence that's fighting. So you may lose that battle, or you may, you know, start to lose the battle. But you're still a devotee. You're a 10, 20, 30-year devotee. But somehow or other, by bad association or offense or whatever, you lose your taste, but you're still a devotee. And then you see, oh, it can be very profitable to be a devotee. So I think Prabhupada saw that. You know, it's interesting to read his purports as the movement went on. You know, he became very kind of realistic about some of the prospects. You know, yeah, we have seen some of our sannyasis. Gonna, you know, it happened, even during Prabhupada's day. So that's what I think happens. You can turn. We're always able to, you know, it's free will. We can become demonic, and even in the guise of a devotee.
You covered it.
Thank I covered it. Okay, all glories to the Prabhupada.